Hey, all you evil rogues, stop looting the graves and listen up. It's time for another episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, a show dedicated to the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, tips, interviews, and reviews for the community, by the community. And now, here's your host.
Hello, I'm Trey, a.k.a. Asher Conzillo, and I'll be your host tonight for the Neverwinter Nights podcast. Jay and Michelle are out this week. Jay, I think, is bad sick, so it's just going to be me tonight. So I hope y'all will sit back, and I have a few feedback emails to go over and a few news items, and then we'll get into a great interview that Michelle has done with Island's Adventure Persistent World. Okay, tonight I'll start out with a little bit of feedback and some questions from our forum. Charles in Orlando, a.k.a. Megaframe, he sent a question: did you guys catch the internet application purported to launch with D&D 4th Edition? And he was just wondering what our thoughts were, and thought that maybe we could get some good predictions from Bruce Nelson on the reality of this development. So I shot off an email to Bruce, who's been on our show many times and has lots of D&D experience, and I'll just read his email reply that he sent back to us. He actually sent a letter off to the Wizards of the Coast about the D&D 4E tabletop software, and he says, this is quoting his letter, "I was extremely excited to hear that D&D 4E would have an internet component. I thought, finally. But while trying to learn more about this exciting part of D&D 4E, I was disappointed to find that it would only be available via subscription service. Now, I don't mind paying a startup charge for the tools, maybe even like $100, but there's no way I'm going to pay a monthly fee, particularly because I like to DM primarily. This has several problems. One, DMing is a lot of preparation, and I can't do it very often. Number two, DMing is a lot of preparation, and it doesn't make sense for me to pay for the opportunity to spot others a good time. And three, I can DM on NWN 1 or 2 for free, since I already own both." He goes on to say, "I really don't think this is the right business model for you. For starters, I have my doubts that you'll be able to hold on to a lot of subscriptions unless there is near constant stream of great, high-quality sessions at any given time. Having played on Neverwinter Connections for years, there's always a dearth of good DMs. I think you'd quickly find that requiring a subscription for the tools fails because there just isn't a reason to try it out. Here is what I'd like to suggest as an alternative. First, sell the tabletop directly and allow unlimited use for free with your friends. Second, charge for Dragon and Dungeon Magazine as well as for a high-quality matching service. Thus, people really into playing online will end up subscribing to your service. Third, don't ever charge for DMs. You want them to pull in other players. Fourth, allow DMs to make money for pulling in players. Pay them money from the subscription service based on how many players they're putting through adventures on the matching service. You do this and you'll open up the floodgates to high-quality online games that will add to your subscription service at a much faster rate than if you have to somehow build that network from scratch." So there's Bruce's take on the D&D 4E tabletop software. And Bruce, I thank you for sending that in for us and allowing us to use that on the show. And if anyone else has any other thoughts, feel free to stop by our forum and let us know what you think. And also, doing some more reading, Jay found out, did a little more research and found a blog that talks about the D&D edition rules. And it sounds like that it will be late next year before we actually see the actual manuals. But it's a very interesting development that we need to keep our eye on. So we will try to do that. And if anybody else knows anything else, please let us know. Okay, so now let's move into some news. GameZone put out a new article last week about Mask of the Betrayer for Neverwinter Nights 2. They did a PAX 2007 preview of the new expansion for Neverwinter Nights 2. Atari got to show off the title at the Penny Arcade Expo in the Washington State Convention Center in Seattle. And you can check that over at the GameSpot, and I'll include a link in the show notes. And it has some pretty cool screenshots of what looks like an Earth Elemental. And it also mentioned that there's going to be different planes of existence. Not only will players be able to adventure on the prime material plane, but they'll be able to enter the shadow plane to fight monsters that are not visible on the prime plane. That sounds very interesting. Some other new features will include new outdoor and indoor tile sets, some new spell chants, more than 24 new monsters, 6 epic spells, and more advanced AI. So be sure to check out that article. And we can't wait till late September, early October when that comes out. Also in the news, over on the Vault, Lady Desire has announced that they've come out now with the D20 Modern for NWN2, a full version of the game, much like the current project for NWN1. It's called Fractured Realms, a partial conversion of NWN2 using the D20 Modern system. So she goes on to say if there's any NWN2 developers that would like to assist them in their ambitious projects, they're welcome to go check them out. So if you're looking to help them with that, go check it out. And actually, what caught my eye on this is that Rob McGinnis from Obsidian actually posted a comment to this news section saying that he's looking forward to this and asked them to contact him via PM so that he could help out, swing some help their way. So that was kind of cool. I wanted to mention that. Also this past week, I took the liberty to create us a new guild for the podcast on the BioWare Guilds Registry. It's called the NWN Podcast Guild. And you can go over there into their guilds and registry and check that out. I also sent out lots of invitations to a lot of our listeners that have registered on our website. So hopefully you received some of those. And if you want me to send you an invitation, feel free to stop by our website and let me know, and I will. But I thought that would be another way to bring visibility to our podcast over on the BioWare forums. So check that out over at nwn.bioware.com/viewguild.html?gid=15460. And I'll include that link in the show notes. Also, while I was looking through our user registrations, I came across not a new world to the community, but a new world to us here at the podcast staff. Triple Ott signed up on our website, posted a link to his website at Black Dagger Avalis 1 and 2 Persistent Worlds. So be sure and go and check that out. So there's the original world of Avalis, which was for Neverwinter Nights 1, and there's now Avalis 2, The Seven Cities, A New Beginning. And you can go to their website at www.avalis.org, and they have quite extensive websites. Looks like the world of Avalis has been around, looks like going on 20 years. It's a world born out of the void and into an age of strife when the demon Nagaria brought forth from another dimension 9 prisoners who were to become gods, a world of magic where vortexes of raw power gave birth to all things arcane and divine. A world of steel, where great battles engulfed the entire continent of Nigeria, forever changing her face, her peoples, and marking the epochs of time. A world of balance, where no one philosophy or race holds sway. Avalis is a role-playing environment created for use online. It's continuously running and available. So if you seek high fantasy with intense role-play, where your character and the characters around you come to feel not just like a collection of stats and pixels, but true living beings, and Avis is a place for you. So be sure and check that out, and we thank Triple Ott and the people over at Avis for registering on our podcast website. So be sure to check that out. Now let's get into some community updates from Obsidian over on their Neverwinter Nights 2 community update blog. For this week, their Mask of Betrayer section focuses on the prestige class preview of Invisible Blade. Invisible Blades are deadly fighters who prefer to use daggers and related weapons in combat. Sounds like a very interesting prestige class that's coming out with that track. While the Invisible Blade is not a direct translation of the D&D version, Rob McGinnis says, I think we did a pretty good job of adapting the class to the Denver Winter Nights 2 engine. The Invisible Blade definitely increases the usefulness of the feint skill, and using constant bleeds and sneak attacks is a great way to cause grief to an adversary. The Invisible Blade class has a unique feel to it, and when combined with a feat like Epic Precision, can be quite devastating to your opposition. There's also some pictures of some custom spears that the community has been working on. Never Winter Night Vault user Fadigan created some custom spears. You can check those over on the vault. Also, they give some premonitions on 107 beta patch notes. You can check those out. They've already posted them on the forum, Bioware forums, but they also have them here in the blog. It talks about the character mode and strategy modes. In advance of the release of Mask of Betrayer, they're including one of the major new revisions that they've made to camera and control modes. Now the four camera modes, top-down, chase, driving, and free camera, have been consolidated into two modes that are more configurable and clearer to use than the old modes, character mode and strategy mode. So that sounds like a welcome thing, because I know I always struggle with those camera modes. So to give you a little bit of a peek view into what character mode is, in character mode the camera falls behind and over the shoulder of the currently controlled character, and then in the strategy mode is top-down play mode that is intended to make controlling a full party easier. A new options menu that 107 introduces that gives you access to consolidated and clear options for each camera mode and better organization of the already existing options. They have revamped the marquee and multi-selection to make controlling a full party much easier. You will see the new improvements to marquee and multi-selection in the new strategy mode. They've also made some UI improvements. There's a party AI on and off button now. There's a player chat list, which is now available on the player menu. They've added handles to the chat windows to allow you to move them around more easily. There's log command consoles, and the console commands are no longer case sensitive. They've made some gameplay improvements. Dark vision and low light vision are now modes that can be toggled on and off using the mode bar. They've added a new bronze dragon. They've made some improvements to stealth to make it more effective in multiplayer environment. As far as the tool set, they've added a find a resource plugin. They've also added a creature appearance wizard that will allow you to change the appearance of spawned creatures and creature blueprints. They've added a texture swapper that allows builders to swap the textures in a tile set. Say that 6 times real fast. They've also added a new custom sky dome system that will allow users to replace the NWN2 skies with sky domes of their own creating. Areas now have additional settings in the day and night stage properties that allow builders to desaturate an area. And so what that will do is remove a percentage of the color from an area all the way to black and white. As far as the DM client, they've added a UI feature that will allow DMs to adjust player and creature alignments using a slider bar. Comments from the tool set will now show up on the creator. The distance a DM can zoom out has been greatly increased, and a filter feature has been added to the DM client player list. This will allow DMs to select certain players and filter the list down to only show those selected players. So those are some of the new features that will be coming out in patch 107 for Neverwinter Nights 2. The week of August 24th, I guess that Friday that we came out with our last episode, they actually announced in the blog the winners for the fan art contest. And the winners are, first place, Meet the Party by, I'm going to butcher these names, but so forgive me. First place was Meet the Party by Mentut Hinian. Second place was King of Shadows Enters the Merdelane by Jay Cullen. Third place is Construct versus Grobnor by Maybe. And for the favorite creature or monster category, first place went to Earth Elemental by Kamen Anev. I think I voted for that one. Second place went to Shadow Reaver by Vea. And third place went to Org Mage by Labian. So congratulations for those winners. And they looks like they're going to get some good prizes and goodies. Okay, so they also talked about the next competition, which is the Custom Content Contest. This contest will be much longer than the others, and it will allow people to work with the Expatron a bit before they have to submit anything. And this contest will span for 3 months and will cover different aspects of custom content. So they're going to have the following categories: creature monster, which requires animations, weapons, buildings, which can have animations if you like, placeables, can have animations, but you don't have to, clothing and armor, and then props and miscellaneous. So if you're interested in entering that contest, it looks like November 30th will be the cutoff date for that one. So good luck to everybody on that one.
If you are a cleric, druid, sorcerer, or wizard, it is highly desirable to have at least 16 in your primary spellcasting ability score. You will eventually need to raise this score to at least 19 to cast your most powerful spells. Bards and warlocks should have high charisma, but this is not as great a necessity for these classes. A paladin or ranger should have a wisdom of at least 12.
Okay, and now without further ado, sit back and enjoy the interview that Michelle had with Lady Onog and Lord Alex on the Island Adventure Series.
Hi, this is Michelle from Neverwinter Nights Podcast, and I'd like to introduce Lord Alex, a.k.a. Alan, and Lady Una, a.k.a. Anya. Hi, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Very good.
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'm very pleased to be doing this interview, and I thank you.
Great. Well, thank you.
Okay, would you guys like to tell the Neverwinter Nights community a little bit about yourselves, the role in the community, what else you do, and like to share?
Sure. We are longtime gamers. We're married for over 12 years now. We like to multiplay games, and Alan is actually a longtime pen and paper D&D person. I didn't get into RPGs until computer RPGs, and actually not until Daggerfall.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Now that I've worked on Daggerford, I'm always saying Daggerfall when I mean Daggerford. But anyway, so I'm an accounting manager by day, and Alan's a technical writer
and a superhero by night.
Cape and all.
Only on Fridays.
Oh, yeah. Only on Fridays. Okay.
Yeah, Friday nights.
We started on modding, let's see, how many years ago was that? Like four,
yeah,
five?
It's been a while.
It was after Neverwinter.
2002, 2003, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, way back.
Oh, wow. That's been a little while then. So you've been in the Neverwinter Nights 1 community for quite a while.
Yeah, pretty much. I'd say maybe 6 to 9 months after Neverwinter 1 came out, we kind of started playing around with the tool set a little bit. Actually, I did, just for fun. Just I'd never really played with one before, and though I didn't have a scripting background, I wanted to see, what a tool set was like. So I kind of tried a few things and created a little mini hut with somebody, a person inside walking around. And I turned to Anya and I said, I'm a writer. I know nothing about programming or scripting.
Oh, but that's an essential part is being a writer.
I was able to do this in about 30 minutes. So she has a background in scripting and a little bit of programming. So I said, you could do this. So she kind of looked at it and said, I think I could do it.
Yeah.
If Mr. Writer type here can pull it off, then step aside.
And actually, I was unemployed at the time. So I think, he was partly suggesting it just to sort of keep me busy because I was getting depressed.
Aww.
Being on a, this was like actually.
But how sweet is that? Aww.
And then, okay, you want sweet. The first thing I made for a test was a little, like a Valentine's Day mod for Alan. And I put Lord of the Rings characters in there because we're both big Lord of the Rings fans. And so and it didn't take that long. So then I thought, okay, well, that seems like it's pretty easy. So then
she had Gollum propose to me or something, you know. Every Lord of the Rings fan's dream come true.
Oh, yeah. Truly. So then the whole reason I went to the movie.
So that's how we got started in it.
Yep. All right, Island Adventures, which, by the way, I played both, and fabulous. I loved every bit of it, which you guys already know that because I've already left a comment.
Great, thank you. It's always good to hear that.
Very welcome. Horns of the Craven and the Color of Light series was inspired. What inspired these two modules and the storyline?
Well, we started with the Horns of Craven as we were really into X-Files at the time. And Anya had done her little Valentine's mod for me, which was really neat. And and she did it really fast. And she said she was out of work. So we were like, well, why don't we do, you know, a mod? Why don't we do a real adventure like some of the ones we'd played? We'd played Adam Miller's Shadow Lord series by then, which at that time was sort of the gold standard. And in my opinion, stayed the gold standard for a long time because he had kind of everything in there. You know, he had the good dialogue, the interesting characters, the sort of epic quest.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was, at the time, it was much better than just about anything else out there. So we were like, well, we want to do it in that style. We want to do something kind of like what he did, but we want to do it with sort of an X-Files feel.
Mm-hmm.
We also wanted to keep it in the Forgotten Realms because we knew that people were familiar with that setting. So we were like, well, how do we meld the X-Files and Forgotten Realms with a Adam Miller Shadow Lords type mod? And what we came up with was this notion of people getting shipwrecked, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to give too much of it away because it's a little bit of a spoiler, but, I mean, it happens so early in the mod. I mean, you're shipwrecked on this island almost, you know,
right.
With the opening credits, kind of. And you're shipwrecked on the island, and then the whole thing was going to be, like in an X-Files episode, kind of like, well, what's going on? You know, all the people on the island they're kind of strange, and they have weird ways of describing the things around them. They're seeing things. They're almost sort of, seeing apparitions and things, and you're more and more feeling like, Mulder and you're kind of like, mm-hmm. Well, you know, what's going on here? You know, what's the secret behind this island? So that was the X-Files angle that we worked in there.
Yeah, I enjoyed it immensely.
And as we started working on that idea, we were like, well, you know, we're really enjoying this. So maybe this is really a sort of a trilogy. Maybe this is going to be more than one mod. At the minimum, maybe two mods.
And we kind of figured, well, we'll put each one on an island, so they'll be independent stories, but we wanted to tie them together somehow with a bigger story.
Mm-hmm.
So the Island Adventures was sort of the old style Flash Gordon serial, you know, where each adventure is kind of its own thing.
Right.
You know, a new adventure. So each island was going to have its own feel, very different from the other islands. And, the first island was going to be this sort of X-Files type mystery. And, but we had to come up with an overarching plot that would kind of tie the whole thing together and would also give a way where you could get from one mod to the other, which is how we started the whole thing with the sort of the gypsy sisters, you know, this sort of coven of gypsies who are sort of involved in all the different island adventures and sort of they're the ones who, when you die, they help you get back to the island and all those kinds of things. So it kind of evolved that way. And we started having this overarching plot, and we started to tie it in with, we were like, we both really loved Baldur's Gate. Baldur's Gate 1 and Baldur's Gate 2. Baldur's Gate 2 is still probably my favorite RPG?
I tried really hard to play that game because I heard the story was phenomenal and I could not get used to the interface to save my life.
Yeah.
Did you try and play it after Neverwinter?
Or yes, before? After.
Yeah. It's hard because once you get used to the whole 3D thing, it definitely is hard to get used to 2D again.
Yeah.
It was good. I mean, we played it when it first came out and we really enjoyed it.
So I was thinking, well, wouldn't it be interesting? Nobody's really worked, you know, the ball spawn, the son or daughter of ball into their mods at that point. Nobody'd really investigated how to sort of tie in some of a connection with Baldur's Gate. So then we came up with this idea of that, you know, you, the main character, were going to be not a ball spawn yourself, but you were going to be hunting one down.
Mm-hmm.
That one of the ball spawn had not been destroyed, as had happened in Baldur's Gate 2, that one had gotten away and was gonna come for the Baldur's Gate player, was gonna come for that player and assassinate him or her sometime in the future. So you were given this task, you were put in the body of a mortal to come down and hunt down this hidden ball spawn, the one that that got away, you know, that hid in the shadows. So we end up with this overarching plot, and that was the thing that was going to tie the adventures together. So even though each island was going to have its own story and be kind of unique, with its own unique characters, there was going to be an overarching theme to kind of pull it all together. So that was really how it came up. And the Color of Light,
where we bit off more than we could chew.
Yeah.
Although it worked out, but we had to cut out a lot of what we wanted to do in it because we just got way carried away. We wanted to make this huge epic thing with all these subsystems and all kinds of stuff.
We had a case crazy. Of a sophomore, what's it called? Sophomore, you know.
Curse or something.
The curse of the sophomore, yeah. I mean, we were like, well, you know, we want to do something really grand, you know. We want to take this island thing to the next degree, and then the third one will be even grander than that. And we did. We bit off more than we could chew. Mostly I did.
I like to remind him of that.
I told you so. I know you guys have very busy lives. What are the chances of a part 3 coming out?
Well, our lives are kind of in a different place than they were when we were working on the mod. As far as Anya's career,
I'm not unemployed anymore, which is good.
That is very good.
I kind of miss being unemployed.
But not only is she not unemployed, but she's heavily employed.
So right.
She just doesn't have the time, and I don't really either. I mean, I've got some interests, since we've both got some interests that we didn't have when we were working on mods. That's not to say that we still aren't gamers, and we still don't play Neverwinter Nights, and we still toss around the idea of sitting down and working on a mod. So, although I wouldn't say it's outside the realm of possibility that we would revisit Neverwinter, it's probably pretty slim at this point.
Okay.
We're enjoying playing other people's mods, and we're enjoying, you know, we still go to Neverwinter Vol almost every night, you know.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite hits.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we enjoy the podcast, and I mean, we enjoy the community. We still enjoy the community. We still have friends in the community, and we kind of enjoy watching from the sidelines, I guess.
It's a fantastic community. I cannot believe how
it is, really.
It's stayed for so many years. Okay, Darkness Over Daggerford, which I'd like to inform people, it received the 2006 Gold Award, BioWare Awards, Hall of Fame, and Independent Game Festival 2007 Awards. I understand you both had a part in making this module, and would you like to tell us what your role was?
Sure. Actually, it came about probably 2 weeks after we finished IA2. And we were just exhausted and just ready to be done.
Toss in the towel. Hang it up.
And then I got an email from Code Poets, Kevin Smith. Mm-hmm. He was working on that project also. And he said, we're working on this premium mod, but we need someone to help out with side quests. We're about 90% done. And I laugh because it was not 90% done. So we talked to Alan Miranda, who was the head of that project, and he's a former producer at BioWare.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided to start his own company, and he, basically came about to getting this premium mod deal. So we had a Skype call with him, kind of like we're doing with you right now, and
mm-hmm.
He liked us and played some of, Island Adventures, and so he brought us on. And Alan basically, same as on our own mods, Alan Miranda, did the writing, and I did scripting and area design for some of the side quests. So that lasted probably a good 6 months, and it was pretty intense, schedule-wise. There are a lot of deadlines. And
yes, very much so.
It started out fun. By the end, it was a little bit grueling.
Ready for the vacation again.
It got pretty heavy around Christmas time of that year, which would have been, I guess, the Christmas before last. It would have been a year ago this past Christmas.
Yeah.
It was pretty, we were really all working hard around that time, and I had a lot of dialogue to write, Anya had a lot of scripting to do, the mod was probably, when we started working on it, I'd say it was probably 30% done.
Maybe fifth. Well, yeah, because some of it got redone.
So there was a lot of work to be done in a short amount of time, and we did it all. I mean, we did the work we were asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got up to a point where we found out that the mod wasn't going to happen, that it wasn't going to
be. It wasn't going to be a premium mod.
Right.
Mod, paid for our work, which weren't going to be paid a lot anyways, but Alan Miranda wasn't going to be paid for his work, and this was his company.
That was so his full-time job.
That
know.
Was pretty pretty devastating for all of us.
Yeah, and I've heard that it happened to a couple of the modders that were pulled from
Stephen
Grange.
Yeah.
Which I loved. Right? He had, I am so upset that Hex Coda 2 didn't get finished.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorites also.
Yeah, oh, wonderful. His stuff, I mean, the first, was it Allegio Eternum?
Excrucio Eternum was probably my favorite Neverwinter mm-hmm. 1 mod.
Yeah. He does wonderful work, and
he
was one of the first people who was tagged, to work on one, and that didn't work out. And then Alexander had been tagged to work on one by himself, and that didn't work out, and then ours didn't work out. And basically they all were canceled, and then Atari decided to greenlight one of them, which is when they did the
Wyvern
Crown. They brought the Wyvern Crown back and decided to finish that one. But we were, we were all very disheartened, and it took the wind out of our sails in a large way.
Oh, I bet.
And we were very unmotivated at a time when we probably should have been more motivated. So actually, a few of the modders who deserve a lot of credit, Kevin Smith, Code Poets, and Lusper.
Recognize all those names.
Yeah, they kind of took the ship home, and some of the rest
of us. Yeah, they worked their butts off to finish that thing, knowing that it wasn't going to be a premium mod. And, of course, Alan Miranda also.
Right.
The head of the project.
Yeah, that's
they deserve loads of credit for finishing that.
Yeah, because I'm one of the ones who were willing to actually pay for the premium modules, and I have them all. I admit it, I have them all.
Yeah, me too.
And I will have to say that there have been several modules out there that I would prefer to play over the OC, over the expansions, all of them. Because the creativity levels of the community modders, well, first off, they're not nearly as censored. They can put a higher rating or a lower rating as far as maturity. And I think the creativity level is really much higher with the community modders.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because you're subjected to having everything scoured by Wizards of the Coast,
Atari,
and BioWare.
Right.
And they all have their own rules about what can and can't be in there and that kind of thing. So I understand it. I mean, they're trying to hit a mass audience and they don't want to alienate anybody. But at the same time, you do lose something with that in terms of creativity.
It's probably very similar to how filmmakers in Hollywood feel like whatever they do, it's going to be run through a filter.
Right.
You know, a producer's filter.
Then they sell the uncut version, too.
Exactly. The director's cut comes out later. And when you're doing your own mod, it is the uncut version. It's
right.
Always, you always get final cut. You get the last word. You know, if you want to have an R-rated scene in there, put it in there.
Absolutely.
Know, if you want to have some bad language, you know, if you think it'll up the ante, then put it in there. If you want to have your setting be, modern day Iraq or whatever, do it. You know, there's no holds barred.
Well, I did notice in the community that there are a lot of over 18 players, more so than I think teenagers even, because the RPG games just don't seem to appeal to the younger kids anymore. They want to shoot everything and...
Yeah. That's true. It definitely pulls a,
give me a good story in my game and I'm a happy camper.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, back to your busy lives. Oh, I apologize. I'm sorry, Alan.
No, I'm done.
Okay, back to your busy lives. Any plans for Neverwinter Nights 2?
We did a little experiment, because I was involved in the toolset beta, and I really like the toolset, but it does take longer to make a mod, no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a... You know, quite a learning curve in terms of creating the outdoor areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really got good. I mean, I cannot make a good-looking area to save my life in the Neverwinter 2 toolset. I think I could eventually if I kept, you know, messing around with it and trying to improve. But it's so time-consuming
right.
to get to that point.
Your life has changed considerably since then.
Yeah. So we decided to do a little experiment. Kind of thinking about whether we would do IA3 or not. And we decided to create one area that we were going to do in IA3 and put all the placeables and everything. And it took us, 4 hours, I think?
Give or take, yeah.
And then we started figuring out how long is it going to take. And it didn't look good. That was the worst part. If after the 4 hours it looked really great, that might have been better.
A little more inspiring.
But then we went in there, you know, and it was like, ew.
and for people who play our mods, you know, I don't design areas. So, you know, Anya, Lady Una, can do some very nice areas. So after 4 hours, I was thinking, well, we're going to see something pretty good. Because after 4 hours with the Neverwinter Nights 1 tool set, she could accomplish a lot. And, you know, that was our goal. But what we ended up with at the end was something that neither of us felt
it would still need easily another 4 hours of work, if not more. So we multiplied that by how many areas we would need to do and then add on time for scripting and writing. And it just was an enormous amount of time. So we said, maybe not.
Oh, well, darn. I was really hoping for the part 3, but okay.
I know. The thing is, I'd really love to do it because, and we even thought about just doing it in Neverwinter 1.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the audience at this point would be so small. Because IA3 actually could be a more reined-in module. It wouldn't be on the scale of IA2.
Mm-hmm.
Just by the nature of its story.
Right.
And it's really a cool setting and we had some really good things planned. So I'm still like thinking somehow someday I'm going to find a way to do it. Maybe like get fired from my job and be unemployed again or something.
Okay, well let's not hope that.
No. Some days, but no.
I stayed out too late on the weekend.
But, yeah, I mean, I'd love to do it, but I don't know.
Maybe they'll let you play on your computer at work. You know?
Yeah, probably not.
Okay, well, you guys already answered question six. I was going to ask how you became, you know, the team that you were, but obviously we all know this now. You're married.
Yeah.
Ultimate team. The ultimate
yeah.
team.
It's very, and our two computers are in the same room, so very easy to collaborate.
Oh, absolutely. Who else have you worked with in the Neverwinter Night community?
Well, the people that we mentioned, Lusper.
Damien.
He's called. Well,
I forgot what his last name is.
The Baron of Gateford, who's done some mod work and who worked on Daggerford for a little while early in the project.
I don't think he's really in the community anymore, but he was a fun person to talk to during the Daggerford project. Really great sense of humor.
Yeah, very, very, very fun.
And
guy.
Damien too. Damien's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Like we said, Code Poets, Kevin, who did most of the systems work.
He's like super scripter extraordinaire.
Yes, definitely. And I had done some work on the Reviewers Guild. That was a while
ago. So, yeah, you got to know the people in the Reviewers Guild. And Alexander, he didn't work on Daggerford, but he's actually working with Ossian
now. Alexander,
he's like, for a while, he was the head of the... and he did Crimson Tides of
Tether. Yes, awesome module.
Yeah.
I played all of them. Fabulous.
He's a really good guy. He actually reviewed our first mod and gave it a really good review, and so we were so pleased. You know, I started emailing him to thank him and stuff. And
I think I actually emailed him for an interview. I never got a message back, though. I've also tried to get Adam Miller, and, well, I know they're all busy people.
Yeah,
so.
Us second-tier folk have time.
Well, and Adam Miller, I mean, every now and then I'll check his blog, and he is like, I've never seen anybody so focused on, I mean, he just works on his mods every single day.
Right.
It seems like. Every time I check, he's
out. I would love it.
Last night I spent 2 hours doing this, and it's like, he never takes a break. It's incredible.
I would love to get him. He is such a paramount figure in the Neverwinter Nights community. Everybody knows who he is.
Yeah.
He's got just incredible mods. I just finished Dark Waters not long ago. And I would really love to get him. I'm going to keep trying. He'll get
sick. Well, maybe right after he releases the next one would be a good time, because then it would be publicity.
Well, I figure either I could bug him to death and he'll just get tired of me bugging him and say yes, or no. Isn't it terrible? Oh. Okay, is there anything you could tell new modders to help get them started, to let them know what they're in for? Okay.
I would suggest they have a lot of free time or not many other hobbies willing to devote a lot of time to that, because it is very time consuming, unfortunately, even in Neverwinter 1, maybe even a bit more in Neverwinter 2. Or work in a team that can help with that, because you can split up the duties. The downside of that is it takes a lot more coordination. I mean, it worked out well with me and Alan, because we're in the same house and working in the same room. But for people, especially if you're in different countries, you know, then trying to coordinate even the time to have a Skype conversation is a challenge. But
good communication.
Yeah, exactly. And then tutorials definitely helped a lot. When I first started, I read a bunch of tutorials, and that's really what got me going. And just experimentation, and, you know, crack open some other people's mods and try and look behind the scenes and see what they did and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would add to that that it's important to try and find avenues for ideas, and try and find avenues that are different than what the other modders are trying to do. So, for example, you know, try and avoid some of the standard sort of cliched stories.
Walk off on your own beaten path, maybe.
What's that?
Don't walk through the beaten path.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the magic crystal, you know, hidden away, and you have to go find it. You smash the magic crystal into four shards. You
fetch, retrieve, return.
You find the shards. You bring them back. You make the crystal. You solve the mystery, and I mean, I know that there's limitations of a role-playing game that force you to go on some kind of fetch and find quests, but, you know, if you're creative, you can come up with some ways that are a little bit more interesting, you know, a little bit more, that take a little bit more of a thought process of just finding items A, B, and C, and D, and combining them to make item E, you know, which seems to be what most of RPGs are about. So we do a lot of stuff. We do sort of, I wouldn't call it research, but we watch, you know, like the History Channel, and we do a lot of reading, and ideas just sort of pop up. We're big movie fans. We watch a lot of old and new movies, and, you know, we'll be watching a movie and an idea will pop up, and we'll look at each other and we'll say, you know, that's something I haven't seen done in a mod before. Why don't we try and pull that in? That would make a really interesting quest in a mod.
Mm-hmm.
So I think rather than just trying to do the real typical things with mods, that people try and branch out and think of it in more of cinematic terms, you know? A game can be kind of like a movie.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the story also. The story is just, for me, the story really makes the mod for me. The storyline is just phenomenal, and I'm captivated from the get-go.
Yeah, that's very important, you know, and grabbing somebody immediately. If you read, you know, how to write screenplay books, they say the first 10 minutes of the movie is probably the most important 10 minutes in the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's where you have to get someone. You know, you have to grab them in their seat and say, stay for the rest of this movie, you know. You've seen the first 10 minutes, and now you cannot leave the chair. You have to find out what's going on.
Yes, I don't want any more popcorn. I'm staying here. I may miss something. The bathroom can wait.
Right, right. And I think, you know, I think mods definitely have to be that way. Mods that start off slow, you know, that start off where there's nothing going on for the first two or three hours.
Wondering.
And you're reading too much dialogue, you know, and you're wandering around large areas. Those are ones that people will say, you know, I've got other things I want to do tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Whereas if you get them in that first 10 minutes where something big happens right off the get-go and there's already a mystery to be solved and you already have your journal's already got three or four exciting quests in there.
Yay!
That's what somebody will want to play.
I completely agree with you. What if any difference or changes have you seen within the Neverwinter Nights 1 community versus 2?
It seems like, and I haven't kept up as well. I think Alan's actually kept up a little bit better with the Neverwinter 2 community than I have, but it seems to be a bit smaller, not quite as active. And I think part of that is probably the increased complexity of the tool set and the fact that custom content isn't as easy to create. Because I remember there was a lot of custom content with Neverwinter 1. And I think that was exciting for mod makers because they, you know, I know I used to always go in the vault and see what new custom content is there and can I use it in my mod.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that there is probably a more dedicated core base of people, and many of them may be in teams, working in teams, that are going to make higher quality mods. So you'll probably see fewer mods, but higher quality ultimately. That's what I suspect anyway.
And you, Alan?
I'll let Alan say something about that too.
Yeah, I think we're going to see, you know, there's the quantity versus quality argument, and I think that quality is going to win out maybe with Neverwinter Nights 2, and that I see people, like Anya said, teaming up, trying to go for something a little bit more advanced. Most of that is due to the time requirements of the new tool set, but some of it is just that people feel like at the end of Neverwinter 1, we reached a certain level of professionalism with some of the mods, some of the user-made mods that were extremely elaborate. Big cutscenes and lots of custom content and mods that were challenging and sometimes surpassing the premium content and the expansions. So people were thinking, well, if I'm going to do something really good that's going to get people's attention in Neverwinter Nights 2, it's going to have to meet that sort of new gold standard. And I can't do that myself. Maybe I can accomplish that with 2, 3, or 4 people. And, you know, when they start working in the tool set, they see that, you know, maybe even 2 or 3 people is not enough. Maybe 4, 5, 6 people is what's required because of the, you know, the time requirements to get that level of what people were able to accomplish in Neverwinter Nights 1. Because, I mean, really the scope of the work in Neverwinter Nights 1 was incredible. Nothing like that has ever been done before. No other mod community has been as prolific as the Neverwinter Nights community has been. And the quality, I mean, when you look at the top 200, 300 mods, I mean, you know, there's every kind of mod you could imagine for Neverwinter Nights 1. Any kind of story you could want to experience, fantasy and otherwise, is in there. And people just feel now that if they're going to do something really interesting for Neverwinter Nights 2, they're going to have to put in some real time and effort and sort of come up with something a little bit grander than before. So that's why I think that it's taken longer. We don't see as many mods as we did before, but I think when we do start seeing more mods, which I think we're on the cusp of seeing actually quite a few mods, these mods are going to be of a pretty high level. And I think people are going to be pleased with them when they get them.
I agree. I really do. I think it's a whole new caliber of module making. And I did notice that a lot of them are teaming up and actually doing these big, huge projects like Rogdeo Studios. And they're coming out with their, oh gosh, now I've just had a complete mental block. And I know what it is. But, their trilogy that they're coming out with. And I did get to check out a little preview, and so far, wow, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I'm actually more familiar with the name of their company than I am with the mod, just because they've been posting on forums, and they were on the forums early on asking people's ideas of, you know, what would you like to see in mods, and are any of you interested in helping us out and doing?
I think it's Planescape, isn't it? Planescape that they're doing?
Yes, it is.
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Planescape style mod.
I enjoyed doing the interview with them. They were very informative, and wow, it was a really long interview. It was fantastic, though.
That's great. That's great. And they seem very energetic and enthusiastic. And,
oh yeah.
You know, that's what it's going to take to keep the community rolling along for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And do you guys have any additional comments that you would like to make to the Neverwinter Nights community?
No. Other than, I mean, from my perspective, it's been a wonderful experience for us. I mean, it's enriched both of our lives, and in a lot of ways probably even enriched our relationship, you know, as far as giving us this creative outlet we've been able to work on together and see that, you know, we have, you know, that when it comes down to it, we can sort of, you know, work through something together, something really complex, and see it through. So it's given us a lot of ideas about other avenues of trying something similar, you know, writing a story together or starting a business together. And these are all ideas that we've tossed around since working on the mod that we didn't think along those lines before. You know, I kind of did my thing and she kind of did hers, so.
Kind of created the creative flood.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also, I mean, the people we've met in the community have been really great. People have emailed about the mod, and the people we worked with on Daggerford, and just to everybody. It's been a really good experience, and we've enjoyed it a lot. And I really hope the community keeps going and starts, you know, really cranking out some mods for Neverwinter 2 and beyond.
A little improv question. I apologize. I didn't put this in here. I just thought about it. Are you guys going to be playing The Mask of the Betrayer?
I think so. I'm kind of, actually, Alan's computer broke down and he got a new, higher end one, and he was playing Neverwinter 2 on it, and it looked a lot better and ran a lot better than it does on mine. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to upgrade my computer in the near future and then play Mask of the Betrayer, because, definitely looks better on. And from what I've read about Mask of the Betrayer, it sounds like it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too. I watched some trailers for it, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, now one thing I'll say, just in case anybody from, what do you call it? Obsidian.
Obsidian.
Obsidian is listening, is I really hope they take some of the toolset tools, the toolset plugins that the community has made, and find a way to incorporate them into the official toolset. Because the problem is, every time they upgrade, every time a new patch comes out, anybody who's made a plugin has to recompile their plugin for it to work. And some of these people are already gone, you know, left the community or just don't feel like continuing to update their plugin. And I think that some of those plugins are really, really helpful. I think it would go a long way towards encouraging new modders and mm-hmm. old modders to continue modding if they would incorporate some of that into the official tool set, either by buying it from the creators or creating something similar, their own version or whatever. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Well,
I think that would help the community.
You guys, anybody who has listened to this and agrees with her, I will give you a little tip. Go to Neverwinter Night Connections on MIRC. Go into the Neverwinter Night 2 chat room, and Rob McGinnis is in there all the time. So just okay. Driving crazy. And he's really cool to talk to also. So,
okay.
And Leslie, do you have any questions for us here at Neverwinter Night Podcast?
Oh, I'll let Alan ask a question.
I'll try to answer it.
Well, how long do you plan on going with the podcast? I know a lot of people enjoy
listening.
For as long
as people will listen. Seriously, we love doing it. We truly love doing it. It is not a chore at all. I absolutely enjoy it. When they asked me to join the staff after they interviewed me, I was completely like, can I really do this? And I found out it was completely fun. I just have such a good time. I don't know if you guys have ever heard our bloopers, but oh my gosh, we're so bad.
We'll have to hear some of those.
Well, the last episode that was just released, the bloopers are, wow. Yeah, even I laughed and I was there. So, but we do. We have a great time. We really enjoy it. I enjoy doing interviews. I think we all do, actually. And and I love going and getting interviews. I like to be like hound dog that's just sniffing them out everywhere. Yeah.
That's good. You do a good job.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. They actually interviewed me in episode 13. I solely orchestrated I think there was 10 of them, developers, artists, and so forth from Obsidian that came into our chat room.
Wow.
On MIRC. Yeah. I emailed Obsidian. Ryan Rosinski, you called me back, I left my phone number on there. I wanted to seem real professional and very serious about what I was asking for. He called me back and he says, let's see what we could do about this. And it took about 3 weeks to get it completely set up, but we had a phenomenal group in there. We had Annie Carlson, Rob McGinnis, we had Ryan Rosinski, and we had a bunch of the main programmers and artists and everything else, and it was fantastic. It was, unfortunately, was not a voice chat. People had to send me messages. I was making lists of all their questions. Oh, God, it was horrible. I never even got to be in the chat room. I was running back and forth doing these questions, formatting them on Microsoft Word, getting them all, and then copy and paste.
Yes,
that's exactly what I was doing all the time.
Wow.
But you know what?
That's neat.
It felt great to be able to pull it off.
That's a great experience.
Yes,
yeah.
It was. So yeah. Jay and Trey decided they wanted to interview me, and they did so right after the chat. So all the electricity in the air was still, you know, all the excitement and everything else. And they interviewed me, and 3 episodes later, they asked me to be on the staff.
That's great.
And I've been there ever since. They're stuck.
They're stuck with you.
I'm not allowed to leave, actually.
You'll have to listen to that one. I haven't listened to that
yet.
Yeah,
we'll have to check that episode out for sure.
Well, unfortunately, yeah, go ahead. But I was having internet problems, and my voice got real digitized. It was really weird. But the interview was fun. We had a really good time, and I started in episode 16. Yeah, I thank you guys very much. This was a fantastic interview. You know, all my interviews are really good, I swear. I just pick the best people. Must have a nose for it.
If you've enjoyed the show and would like to help out, we recommend clicking on the PayPal donate link on our website. Placing a few gold pieces in the coffers will go a long way in supporting our efforts. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can use Skype. Leave us an audio comment or question by calling NWN Podcast, all one word. Your comment or question will be recorded and used in a future show. So thanks for listening, and this is Asher Khan signing out. If you have any comments or questions, you can contact us at show at Never Winter Nights Podcast, or you can leave us an audio comment or question via Skype by calling NWN Podcast, all one word. So until next week, get in game and level up, level up, level up, level up.
The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Never Winter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, or their partners and employees. The Never Winter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, which is solely responsible for its content.